A Rose for Danger by Marguerite Bell. Narrated by Siobhan Dowd. Chapter 1. The carriage was travelling at a smart pace, and far from seeming tired, the horses were fresh as ever. Yet they were due to be rested when they reached Canterbury, and the elegant travellers did not intend to try to reach Whitehurst Priory that night. The elderly lady in the corner of the carriage sighed with pure pleasure at the thought of seeing her dear friend Lady Child again, after an interlude that had lasted for far too long, and leaning forward to peer short-sightedly out of the window at the warm July countryside as it sped past, she found it necessary to draw her niece's attention to the delights of the view.
"Only look, my love," she exclaimed. "Did you ever in the whole of England see such a landscape? I vow I feel completely well again, and it is the good Kentish air that has recovered me."
She let down the window with a somewhat unwise rush as she spoke, to inhale a little of that good Kentish air. But as a great deal of dust came in with it, she closed it again hurriedly. The beautiful young woman on the seat beside her smiled briefly and with a tinge of amusement, for she could not recall that her aunt had known a day's illness in the whole course of her life. Then, yawning delicately behind a gloved hand, she expressed the hope that Canterbury was not far off.
"You are not enjoying the journey, my love?"
Mrs. Winterbourne glanced at her a little anxiously.
"I do trust that you have quite thrown off that wicked chill. I told Dr. Mainwaring that if he entertained the slightest doubt about the wisdom of your travelling..."
"Dr. Mainwaring, dear aunt, told you I was perfectly fit, and so I am. I am a little tired, I have the headache, and I own I shall be glad to see Canterbury. But after a night's rest, I shall be in the best of spirits, you may rest assured. Unless the mattresses of Canterbury are stuffed with pieces from Lord Elgin's collection of marbles, as I am quite sure was the case at the last inn we stopped at," she added, with a cool glimmer in her extraordinarily deep blue eyes.
"Yes, indeed, my poor child, that wretched inn!"
Mrs. Winterbourne felt the need to commiserate with her, and the charms of the Kent countryside were temporarily forgotten while she recollected the numerous discomforts of the accommodation they had been provided with during a halt in Sevenoaks.
"If I had but known... But Clear Maddox assured me there was not a better in the town, and I cannot for the life of me understand what she was thinking of, for I have never been more miserably uncomfortable in my life. And then the landlord was so ill-mannered when I complained to him."
She bristled slightly at the memory of indignities all too recently endured.
"And it brought home to me the foolhardiness of travelling without the protection of a gentleman. If my poor dear Giles had been alive, he would have known what to do in such circumstances. But my uncle is no longer alive,"
Juliet Ware somewhat unnecessarily reminded her aunt. Mrs. Winterbourne directed at her a somewhat reproachful look.
"No, dear child, he is not, but there is scarcely a day that passes that I do not miss him."
And groping in her reticule for her handkerchief, she dabbed at her eye with it.
"When you yourself have acquired a husband and have been married for the length of time that I was, when I found myself bereaved, you will understand perfectly how I feel at this moment."
She sniffed delicately into the handkerchief, but at the same time took care to preserve the tip of her nose from anything in the nature of an unattractive redness. She sighed profoundly.
"Yes, indeed, my love. Believe me, you will."
But Juliet merely stared in a bored fashion at the roof of the carriage. Her aunt decided that this was an excellent opportunity to enlarge upon the attractions of matrimony.
"I don't mind confessing to you, love, that it is the greatest wish of my life to see you married. Marriage is such an excellent thing in every possible way,"
she enthused, as if it were part of her mission in life, to make certain there were few, if any, spinsters.
"And there is nothing, nothing more humiliating than to be left upon the shelf. A young woman in her mid-twenties who has turned down several offers and has her face obstinately set against acquiring the responsibilities of a home..."